So the color purple, the color purple. Have you seen the movie or read the book? How many of you have? Wow, a lot of you. So when I was seeing Barbie in the movie theater, they had previews running, and apparently a new release is coming out of the color purple. I know, kind of exciting, right? So in the original film, Shug and Seeley are walking through this beautiful field of purple wildflowers. So you kind of get the idea of why it's called the color purple. And Shug says to Seeley, they start to talk about God. And Shug says to Seeley, "You know, I think God gets really angry when we don't notice the color purple. I understand what Shug is saying. Color purple is so distinctive, isn't it? There's something about it. It's royal. It's spiritual. It sort of just makes you stand up taller when you're in the presence of purple. You know, and so I feel like it's really apt for this particular power we're talking about this week, which is the area of the throat. It's the true voice that we release. It's finding our power. It's standing in our spiritual authority. It's having dominion. So it has that kind of energy behind it. You know, back in the day at Unity, they believed in the power of purple so much that they wouldn't allow any of the typewriters to not have purple ribbon. They had to have purple ribbon, so to write all their letters and all the correspondence. And so that also, if you were using an ink pen, it would be purple. And so there was a woman on my team when I was a supervisor at Silent Unity, our prayer ministry, and she's about this tall, and she always wore these heavy, flowing purple robes. I mean, every day. So she looked, it was kind of like, it kind of had like a Merlin kind of feel, you know, her robes would be behind her, you know, as she walked. And she'd come in my office to sign something, and she'd be like, "Wait a second." And then she'd dig around in her pockets for a while until she pulled out a purple pen, because she would not sign anything without the purple pen, because she'd been part of the old school of Unity. So purple, the color purple, this is big, it seems, for this power. When we think of power, and I know it seems a little redundant that we have a power of power. I don't know. I ran out of ideas there or something. But it does seem like it is about power, so it is aptly named. So in our 12 Powers series, we're about midway through. So this is that power of power. And the worldly idea of power is where we often go when we hear power. Not probably you all in this room, but just out and about in the world, we talk about power a lot. And when we say that, we're talking about, you know, people who do wear robes and carry gavels or wear badges and uniforms or have big window offices and fat paychecks and so on, right? That's kind of what we talk about when we, or think about sometimes when we're talking about power. That's not what we're after here. We're after spiritual power, accessible to all of us, in all of us, available to all of us, regardless of titles and status and so on. So let's get to this dominion idea, because, you know, this idea that comes from the very beginning of Genesis, really, when life is created, when that first impulse of out of the darkness, out of the void, right? There is divine intelligence that wants to know itself. And so you can imagine there's stirrings, there's energy, there's the very beginning idea of light. And out of that emanates all of this creation, including us. And the source of this creation says in Genesis, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion." Dominion with all the plants and the animals and the life forms. So dominion from that time, from Genesis, is so often misinterpreted as domination, right? So very different thing, though, because there's not divine, the divine intent is dominion. The divine idea of dominion is God-sized responsibility for all life. Very different, right? That we have this big responsibility for all life. And certainly by powering over and dominating is not the way. We've learned that by practice, haven't we? We got that one down. And so it's like once we really, on our spiritual journey, you know, we try something and then we try it again because we're sure that's the way. And then we realize, you know what? That doesn't really work. You know, as we say, how's that working for you? We could say that to all of humanity, right? How's this working for us, this domination kind of framework? Not so well, right? And so good news is it's crumbling, right? Good news is it's crumbling. And we get to hear some of the reverberations of that crumbling. But it's okay because we're resilient. We're on this journey. And we know about dominion. And we're moving into greater dominion. C. Lilius Ramsey in 1944 wrote an article called Dominion versus Domination in the Christian Science Journal. And in it, Ramsey points out that in truth, that there is only one dominion, divine principle. And that principle governs everything that exists. So that everything that exists is in harmony with the law of spirit, with divine love. And that nothing can successfully resist it. Ramsey goes on to say that it is an eternal fact of being. And that understanding the spiritual law and its operation brings true peace, brings God's dominion to reflect through humankind. So to live and to move and to have our being in this dominion, there's really one thing to overcome. You could probably guess what it is. Fear. Fear. I don't know what else I heard, but fear is what we're after. Because fear, all things probably that you said, emanate from that place of fear, right? That one thing that causes so much angst in our world, havoc in our world, and so on, comes from fear. That dominating kind of mindset comes from fear. So overcoming fear, then, is a journey to claiming our power. It is all about this journey to come into our spiritual authority, our power of power, to reclaim it. And I can't think of a better analogy or metaphor than the beautiful myth that we have that we all know, the Wizard of Oz. You know, this is something where I don't have to ask you to raise your hand if you've heard of the Wizard of Oz. And you know why? Because it's in the DNA of our culture. It's in our being. We know the Wizard of Oz. And there's something so magical about the Wizard of Oz that touches on so many aspects of the spiritual journey. It starts with Dorothy and Dorothy's desire, her dream for a bigger life than small town Kansas, where she's born, right? And where she's living in the Dust Bowl in the midst of that experience. And so Dorothy's dreaming with her little dog Toto about how life could be different. She has this nighttime dream, and sure enough, a tornado whooshes her up, spins her through the air, and lands her in a foreign place. Now, she's a fairly young woman, and luckily she's got her comfort dog Toto with her, but nothing else is familiar, right? She opens up into this whole new place, whole new people, whole new world. So you can imagine that she's feeling some fear at that moment in that experience. So what Dorothy does then to find her voice is many things, right? One is she follows the Yellow Brick Road, right? And following that Yellow Brick Road one skip at a time allows her to move forward in her journey. But she also gathers up her support team, right? She meets her friends, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion. And what those represent are the traits that she's bringing along with her: intelligence, heart, a caring heart, a courageous heart. These are important things to bring with us on the journey, aren't they? Jesus did this. When things were tough, when there were challenging times or poignant times in his life, he brought with him three disciples, Peter, James, and John. They represent faith, the power of love, and the power of wisdom. I would want to bring faith, love, and wisdom along with me on my most challenging moments, wouldn't you? And so he does when he goes up the mountain and has the transfiguration experience. Who's with him? Peter, James, and John. When he raises a 12-year-old girl from the dead, guess who's with him? Faith, love, and wisdom. And when he's praying in the Garden of Gethsemane for his life to be spared, you can be sure that Peter, James, and John, faith, love, and wisdom, are nearby. And so it is for us to consider, what do I need to bring on my journey? At different points on the journey, and who? At different points on the journey, our support team may look a little different on the outside and on the inside. And so it's for us to stay attuned to that to help us along our way. I want to invite you for a moment to connect in with that spiritual power within you. Maybe you'd like to close your eyes for a second and just to recall a recent or a current challenge or situation in your life. It doesn't have to be a big challenge, but just something you're working with, what you're up to in life right now. Just pick one thing. Once you have that situation in mind or condition of life, I invite you to now connect with your innate spiritual power. This is your highest self, your best self. It comes in with a bang. Just allowing yourself to really feel into this power. What does it feel like when I am centered in my power? When I've taken up my spiritual authority? When I have a sense of dominion? What does this feel like? And now if you'll turn toward that situation or condition in your life once again from this perspective, and see if you're guided to do anything, to say anything in particular in this situation. And whether your insight comes now or later, just give thanks in your own way and open your eyes when you're ready. So, as I mentioned, this power is located in the throat area, and that is where that power of the spoken word comes through, right? From this center in us. As Florence Scovel Shinn, the Unity, early Unity writer, would say, your word is your wand. The magic power of the word. To be aware of that for one thing makes it fun, but also makes you aware of the power behind it. So in this picture, you can see where that power is. And I think this picture is really beautiful. It kind of reminds me of how we really dwell in a body temple, how we are filled with light, kind of translucent light, and these energy centers really light up. And if we can think about that, then how we treat it is quite different, right? How we see the sacredness of these places within us and how we can use these powers, the power of the spoken word coming from this place that's between the heart and the mouth, right? This is the channel through which whatever is true in the heart gets expressed or suppressed. And it's always our choice if we allow the truth to come through. So you can see when you reflect on this that when we use negative words, we kind of mar that space that is so sacred. You know, if we walked into a sacred temple, And we might say, oh, it is so beautiful. It's so filled with light. We might be guided to take off our shoes, or we might douse ourselves with sacred water, or even get on our knees and pray. But do we take that same kind of approach to the temple that we dwell in? Because it's filled with the same kind of sacredness and light and love and energy, these powerful centers, these places within us where truth can be spoken, where love, the power of God's love, can be felt, where we can see with spiritual vision. These are not small things that we carry inside of us in this temple. And so we sort of deface the temple, if you will, when we judge, when we are coming from that kind of mindset, when we gossip, when we use this power to gossip, to tear each other down, to tear ourselves down. It's like we kind of create a space, a blockage of some kind by going that direction. And so maybe seeing that image, if you're a visual person, can help you to remember, oh, this is a sacred space here between my heart and my mouth. And so what comes forth matters. So when we consider this, we can shift then. When we notice, we can shift. Eckhart Tolle has a great way for us to shift that he uses for meditation when he talks about to watch when you're meditating. He says, watch your thoughts like a cat watching a mouse hole. And so if we take that up just in everyday life, right, if we watch our thoughts like a cat watching a mouse hole, because thoughts are back behind the words, right? So in the creative process, the thought comes first, and then the words, and the words come, they begin to be expressed and given out into the world and manifested and spread out here, right? So what do I want to spread out here? What do I want to give out here? What do I want to contribute to the world? Not that. We catch ourselves and we say, not that. And we can shift into affirmative truth from there. When we tell ourselves a truth by speaking affirmations, we buoy up that spiritual authority. We stand in the place of power. We give over to the world what God wants us to give over to the world, if you will. What that divine impulse is within us, what the I am of our being pulsates with is truth. It's this ability to see the truth, to know the truth, and to speak the truth. And so Charles Fillmore says, we know every word uttered makes an imprint in the astral ethers. And when there is consciousness of God life in the mind of the speaker, all words become living identities and are perpetuated. Living identities. Do you ever think about your word as a living identity, as a co-created gift into the world, as something that is setting something else into motion that you want to see, that you want to experience, that you want to vision in the world? And we can see, too, we're on the receiving end of the times that we don't want to hear that. We don't want to receive that. We don't want to co-create that. And so all we have to do is not push against it so much, just shift and say, okay, let that fall away. Let that dissolve in the light of God's love. It's not really my business. What am I here for? What am I about? That's where I'm putting my energy. That's where I'm putting my thoughts, my feelings, my words, my creation, my actions. That's the power of power in action. And that's, I think, what we all want to be about. So maintaining the purity of that image of us as a holy vessel, a body temple that holds the light and love of God. When we recognize the creative power of our word, that we are actually creating the world as we speak, we definitely speak more skillfully, more mindfully, and more wisely. It doesn't mean we're going to speak perfectly. All of a sudden, we're going to master these skills, right? It's skill building. It takes time, right? There are different stages of skill building. At mastery level, we kind of come into this unconscious competence level where we don't even think about it. It's just effortless. But it might be kind of clunky along the way to get there, right? And we have lots of tools in Unity, compassionate communication, connection practice, really beautiful ways for us to get skillful to speak the way we really want to speak. The Buddha talked about this, right speech. So how do we do it? We listen to Spirit, right? We just open ourselves and listen to Spirit like we all do together every week, and hopefully many of us do every day, is just to take a little time out to get quiet and listen. And in that listening, then we make our intentions too. I intend to speak with wisdom. I intend to speak with love. We let that be our prayer. And then just wait for the words from Spirit. You know, so often I think we're busy rehearsing before we have a conversation, right? Or rehearsing in the midst of the conversation while the person is talking what we're going to say next, you know? And instead, if we stay open, it's so much richer. When we stay open and we just breathe into this space and ground at home in the heart, then what comes is definitely wiser and more loving than anything we could pre-rehearse. And so it's that willingness to trust, to turn over, to allow. And even if then whatever we say isn't clear or is misunderstood in some way, it's not like our one chance, right? We can reframe it. We can say it again because we are speaking and learning and moving and growing in the Spirit and the intention of spiritual evolution and awakening. And everything in the universe, all the goodness of the universe, will conspire to encourage and support and cheer you on to that goal. So there's no, even if you don't see your support team around, you've got a support team, right? That invisible power that is around you at all times. So the disciple Philip, his name means lover of horses, and Mary Magdalene, whose name means watchtower, are the two that represent this power of power, this true voice. Philip became known for his public speaking. And Mary Magdalene was there at all the very significant times in Jesus' life, particularly at the foot of the cross during the crucifixion and the first one to the tomb at the resurrection. She's the first one to proclaim the good news that Jesus has overcome death, overcome fear and overcome death, right? And that life goes on. There is this eternity of spirit, and she's the first one to go and tell. And so that's using that power of power, right? And you have to also put it into the context that Philip and Mary Magdalene lived in a politically and religiously charged time period. So there was great risk for them to just speak the truth out loud, right? Because there could be a risk of even a risk on their lives, perhaps. But still, they were compelled by that inner authority, by that truth, by the power they held to be true to it, to speak that truth, to not repress it, but to open out the heart and to say what we need to say, to be truthful, to have courage. Have you ever known some truth and you didn't speak it? But you felt the urge to say something? You felt like you needed to say something? You felt like some truth needs to be told here, but you held it back? Anybody ever do that? Yeah, we all have, right? For various reasons. Maybe we were afraid for our lives, or maybe we were afraid to be made fun of, or maybe we were afraid to be excluded, or maybe we were afraid. There was fear, right? Whatever, in whatever way it showed up, there was some kind of fear that held us back from speaking our truth. But how does it feel when we do that? How does it feel when we don't say something that we really feel needs to be said? What's that? Holding back, right? Again, that sort of constriction, right? Constriction of the neck, constriction of the body, suppression of the heart. We feel squashed. We feel held back, repressed. Martin Luther King said, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter." Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. In our world, so many things happen, so much, and there's so much information, and there's so many of us, that it can be easy to care about something, to want to speak out about something, and to have 101 other things you need to do, right? So we just need to harness the moments that come, allow ourselves to decide what is ours to do and what's most important. And when it feels important, when it feels like it's bubbling up, not to push it down, but to find a way to say it. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be prettied up. Just say what you need to say. There's a song like that, I think. So being in our power is courageous and honest. To speak truth to power takes a lot of authenticity and honesty and courage, it can. But this is exactly what Dorothy does on her journey. Remember when Dorothy realizes that the wizard is just a man behind a curtain? And she really tells him, right? She lets him know how not okay it is to do what he's doing. Here's this young woman who's just speaking her truth, who went from the beginning of that yellow brick road to being petrified with her little dog under her arm to telling the guy who's supposed to be kind of like the King of Oz, right? This mighty wizard, the truth about himself and what he's doing and how wrong it is. She's speaking that truth to power because she's found her voice. She's able to express the truth. She's in her power. She's moving into her spiritual authority in her quest to go home. What is the quest to go home? But to come back home to spirit, to come back home to truth, to come back home and be grounded in the I am of our being. And that's what Dorothy's whole journey is about. She also throws water on the Wicked Witch of the West, her nemesis, right? And that water is an element of release. And guess what happens? That witch just melts away, right? And so that is the truth of when we express, like, this, I'm letting this go. This doesn't work for me anymore. This isn't helping others. It's not for the greater good. And it's like, it just melts away. It's an illusion that we've been creating for ourselves, you know, fear, false evidence appearing real. It becomes really real. That Wicked Witch of the West becomes larger than life. That Oz with the scary voice becomes larger than life because we have created it as so. And then we just kind of poof, and it's like the house of cards falls. Oh, it wasn't real at all. It turns out it wasn't real at all. What's real is this. What's real is this heart. What's real is this voice. What's real is these powers. What's real is this body temple, this sacredness, this I am that we've been entrusted with to encase and to express, to carry around in the world and to let it out, to release it, to allow it to be seen and to be known so others can wake up too. That's the power of power that allows us to step in, to speak out, to be, to stand on, to come home like Dorothy did. And Dorothy doesn't just do all these things for herself. I think that's really important to note. She does them out of a sense of dominion, with her friends in mind and them getting their gifts, with her dog in mind, with her family back home in mind, and with herself in mind. She doesn't leave herself out. That's important too. She has full self-esteem. It's not about that. We're there. We're present. We're in the mix of what we care about, what the needs are, what the desires are, what our dreams are. We don't lose those to be in service to others. In fact, it's even more strongly known for us when we are in that place. It's just our kingdom is not that small, or our queendom, right? It's big. We have sovereignty. And we move about that space with a sense of sovereignty. Do you know anybody who moves that way? Can you think about that? Like, or maybe you are. When you are in that space, there is kind of a movement about the world that feels graceful, that feels sovereign. And when I say sovereign, I don't mean alone. I don't mean without connection. I just mean like a sense of I feel good in my skin, right? I feel confident. There's a sort of grounding and confidence. A person in their spiritual authority is confident and accessible. And so you trust them. Inherently, people trust somebody who is in their spiritual authority because they're reliable. They're a reliable source. They're solid because they're solid in who they are, and they're solid in who they are because they're standing on sacred ground of who they are. They get it, right? We get it. When we get it, we have arrived. We're home. And so we can carry that home with us when we have these moments of awakening. And then the moments get strung together, and pretty soon it's where we dwell. Unconscious competence. We are graceful, we are confident, we are sovereign, we are respectful of ourselves, of each other, of all life. We are able to see the divinity in all things. We see past all the stuff. We don't get hung up on all the egoic stuff and the personality things. And Brenly and I were talking today, this morning, about Marshall Rosenberg, who created nonviolent communication and compassionate communication. And he uses these little puppets, and he says, one of the puppets says, "I love you." And the other one says, "When?" And that is a lot of how we move about the world, isn't it? I love you when you are behaving the way I want you to behave. You're saying the things I want you to say. You're doing the things I want you to do. But that's not divine love. Divine love says it's without conditions. Divine power says this is the truth. Know the truth. Speak the truth. Act from the truth. And everything will flow from there. You will truly become a co-creator of life when you light up this power. And so, let's look at Charles Fillmore one more time, because this is such a delicious quote. "Anyone who develops sufficient spiritual power may enter the book of life within the cosmic mind and read of its pages." This guy had like almost no school education. Maybe he made it to ninth grade. I can't remember. I don't think he made it that far. But some of the things that Charles Fillmore comes up with, you know he was in spiritual authority. You know his power of power was lit up. To enter into the cosmic mind and to be able to read of the book of life is what happens when we are in this power, is what happens when we're standing in our spiritual authority. Maybe you've seen the cover of the book of life, or maybe you've seen a couple of the chapter titles here and there, or a couple of quotes. And so the idea is that we're not done yet, right? The divine is not done with us yet. And so every day is an opportunity to read more, to see more, to know more, to open up to more, so we can really, truly write the book of life together. That's pretty exciting stuff. So the fullness of your divinity awaits as you step into this power, especially this one, because it is the pathway that will help you to that co-creative power of the word and dominion and spiritual authority. So let's show up that way, and all life around us will thrive because of it, because we will be the living, breathing, walking light and love of God. Sound good? All right, well, let's take up our magic wand then and speak the word. Let's say our affirmation together. I speak and act with spiritual authority, and so it is.